What's going on, people? Welcome to Over the Top, and just like that, 10 matches have already flown by, a quarter of the season already done. There's a lot to get to, so let's just jump straight into it. I'm Kyle, and I've got my man Justin here.
What's up, Kyle? Match week 10 in the books, over a quarter of the way through the season. That's kind of weird, isn't
it?
I feel like we just started doing these things for this season, and Champions League just started, but we're through like 4.5 weeks of the season. So I don't know, man, this is flying by. And this table from like first to 16th or 15th place, I've never seen it so tight in all my years following the Premier League.
Yeah, it's what, maybe 8 points difference. I mean, we were talking before the pod, we'll talk about Arsenal a little bit later, but 14th place sounds really bad, but they're only 8 points off the Spurs.
And 5 points from Champions League spot. So, I mean, 14th sounds terrible.
Yeah.
Awful. Just god-awful. You get that, Jose? Terrible. But, you know, it's actually not as bad as you would think it would be. So, while they haven't played well, it's not code red for Arsenal yet.
Yeah, it's still a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel, but yeah, man, 10 weeks gone. It's really bizarre because I feel like Liverpool won the league only 3 months ago or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy. And just like that, in about a month, the January transfer window. What a weird season. Man.
We're just getting used to new signings from, you know, Ruben Diaz at City to Diego Jota at Liverpool to Rafinha at Leeds, who's like a brand new player. That's exciting. So we're just getting used to the new players, and now we're going to even have more. So that's just, it's interesting to think about. Christian Eriksen to Arsenal, Kyle. That's a new rumor that's come up.
Yeah, I was reading about Manchester United too, which doesn't really make sense to me because they can't even get Van de Beek.
Van de Beek starts and they win. So that's an interesting phenomenon there. But
yeah, well, yeah, let's get into that game then, because you're right. Van de Beek did play this game. We're talking about Manchester United playing Champ, as we like
Champ.
To call it.
Yeah.
We need to get on this Champ train, and we need to make this happen. But honestly, a huge win for Manchester United. Didn't start well, but it ended with some Fergie time action.
They did, Kyle, and they deserved it, to be honest. I mean, as much as you and I love to shit on United, which is, it's a really fun thing to do, they deserved the win. And Ollie, I have to say, even though it took Edinson Cavani a long time to lace up the boots, he did a job after he came on. You know, he came on for Mason Greenwood, assisted the goal for Bruno Fernandes, who just keeps he keeps assisting and scoring for United, it seems like, every single game. And then coming in with the flying header. So, you know, despite his semi-racist Instagram post, he is doing a job for United and was really vital in this game.
Yeah, I mean, I would say he came on in the second half, straight after halftime, and really changed the game for United. I mean, this is the kind of player that United have been crying out for. They were down 2-0 at halftime, not looking good. James Ward-Prowse with his amazing set pieces, that's why Southampton always have such low XG, but they seem
to
because Ward-Prowse's free kicks, man, he's got to be the best in the league at both free kicks and corners. But Cavani, I'm just kind of baffled that people were shitting on United moving for him so much. I mean, you understand the context with how bad the transfer window was, the really annoying Jadon Sancho transfer saga, but they get a player like Cavani who, yes, he hasn't really played in 2 years, but he's kind of the perfect sort of striker for the Premier League. He's big, he's good in the air, he has a box presence, and we found with that first assist that he can pass the ball as well.
Absolutely. I mean, come on the field for 45 minutes and have 0.7 expected goals, and expected goals doesn't tell the whole story, but four shots, two shots on target. I mean, it's an impressive performance. It really is. Dean Henderson coming on in the second half as well, I thought was super interesting. Is that going to lead to more playing time? We'll see what De Gea's injury and how long he has to be out for. But De Gea gave up two goals, and while they're probably not his fault, it's just more goals and leading to that more pressure to play Dean Henderson more. So with injuries, unfortunately for some, come opportunity, fortunately for others. So we'll see what that leads to for Dean as well.
Yeah, and Dean Henderson is definitely good enough to be starting for a I don't know if, about a top six club, but Dean Henderson, we all think highly of him.
I mean, he could start for Everton.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, well, that's not really saying much. Dean Henderson has a shout to start. I think Van de Beek does as well. I don't think this game will do him any harm. I thought his link up play was good, but for me, Cavani is the other one that needs to start. He's really the only player on United's entire squad that's truly a number nine. That's truly a striker. I still am not convinced that Martial or Rashford, who I think really highly of, actually, and even Greenwood, I don't think any of them are pure strikers. I don't know. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think Rashford needs to start every week for United.
Of course.
Honestly, Martial, while he has some bright moments, he's really inconsistent for me. And so when you have someone leading the line as AM number nine, it just doesn't do the job. It's not good enough. And they have an experienced striker in Edinson Cavani, who's done it for Napoli, done it for PSG, can come in and do a job for United, just like Zlatan. And, you know, he's no Zlatan, right? But he can do it. He can come in and do a job, and I think can score. If he starts every week for United, can score 15 goals for this team, which is would be awesome for them.
Absolutely, no doubt. And he gives them another dimension. I mean, they had zero presence in the box before. They relied on quick counters and good link-up play. And Cavani, it's like, if there's any deflected shot in the box, you know, he's just gonna, like, dive in head first like a maniac. He's like a rabid dog or something. I don't know. Really highly of Cavani, and I think he's just perfect for the Premier League. But this game was really odd because I actually thought United in the first half were terrible. I mean, they had some chances. I don't think Southampton defended particularly well, but I was looking at the tactics and they were just really odd to me. It seemed like they had no outlet up top. I couldn't really figure out what Ollie was trying to do or what his instructions were, but you got to give him credit. He made the right changes in the second half, and this is a huge result for Ollie and 100% a deserved win.
Yeah, I mean, against a team in Southampton, transitioning to them, that were playing well, and I would still have to say managing expectations without Ings. And that's really important for them. Like we said, as long as Ings goes, Southampton will go. Well, they haven't had Ings for, what, three games at least now?
Maybe
four. And they've been more than serviceable, Kyle. I think with Ings, a 3-2 loss to Manchester United would not be anything like anyone would freak out over. But without Ings, generating two goals, you have Che Adams playing decent, you have James Ward-Prowse, who you mentioned, Kevin De Bruyne, might be the best set-piece taker in the league right now. Right? And that's a bold statement, it feels like, but, I mean, we're just looking at evidence, and he's done a job over these last few weeks, and so when you have those things and can generate chances from all your set-pieces, you're going to be dangerous in any game, and they have some players as well, and they have a coach that believes in their team, and their team can obviously play for, as we've mentioned in previous episodes. So obviously not the best for game for them. Their defending was terrible. Their goalkeeper gave up a terrible chance that he made up for a little bit, and the double save. But, you know, I have better days ahead for Southampton, but really good win for United, Kyle.
100%. And, I mean, just real quick on Ward-Prowse. Yes, he is a limited player. He's not very athletic. I don't think he's particularly creative or really great in open play, but he's a solid player. But his set pieces, man, he's been doing it for years too. I mean, he can hit, you know, bang in a goal from a set piece, and he takes great corners. So he just adds such a dangerous dimension to this Champ team. You know, I just mentioned a dangerous component to the team. Another dangerous thing. We're moving on to this Arsenal and Wolves game. Just real quick, let's just get it out of the way right in front. About 5 minutes in this game, a pretty scary collision between Raul Jimenez and David Luiz. Jimenez was completely knocked unconscious, and you could actually hear a sort of shattering sound. It was horrible, and it actually turns out that Jimenez fractured his skull. So, you know, our thoughts are definitely with him. I hope this isn't too serious, but fractured skull usually is bad news. We've seen Petr Cech come back from these injuries before, but it also ended Ryan Mason's career. But Kind of weird thing about this situation that made me uncomfortable is David Luiz. He kept on playing, and he was just bleeding from his gaping head wound straight through the tape. I don't know. To me, it didn't sit right with me.
No, Kyle. You know, in every other sport, you don't quite have this problem. As we were talking pre-show, you have basketball, which you can make continuous subs. You can come off the court and go back on. Hockey, obviously known for line changes. You go on and off. Football, American football, you have the same thing where you come off for plays. You can come back. They have actually different players for defense and offense, so that's not quite a problem. I'm missing a major sport. Baseball, you do get subbed out if you leave the game, but I wouldn't call that as physically intense as any of the other sports that I just mentioned.
All the major sports, though.
Right. And so soccer has to figure this out, right? And so what can we do? Because we can't just do a two-minute check on a concussion right after the player says they're fine, and in 30 minutes, there's something clearly wrong with them, right? That's not healthy. That's not good for their, not just for their career, but just their livelihood. You've seen players in all sports that go have undiagnosed concussions and then have a way less lifespan, way shorter lifespan, I should say. So we need to figure it out, Kyle. And I don't know if that means like a temporary sub and having like an independent doctor, just like the American NFL has, where an independent party comes and evaluates the player. And if they say they deem the player to be to have a concussion or not able to go back into the match, then Arsenal, in this case, or I guess Wolves, Arsenal, David Luiz, would have to make a sub. If they deem him okay, then they can go back on. And then you can maybe grant an emergency sub during that period, but something needs to be done because this isn't sustainable for the game, Kyle.
Yeah, I agree. It's not sustainable. I really like this idea of bringing in independent doctors so there's no incentive to have the injured player keep on playing. But to me, I don't know. I think there has to be some sort of situation where there's maybe a 5 to 10 minute examination and the other team just has to go down to 10 men. I mean, I think it would be worth it. I know a lot of teams probably wouldn't like it. It definitely is a disadvantage, but something needs to be done. But moving on to the actual game here, Arsenal, they were horrible in this game.
They were.
They actually go down to Wolves 2-1 on this one. Wolves dominated the game pretty much from start to finish. Really, really nice Podence goal, which I think is slept on. At first, I thought it was a keeper mistake from Leno because he spills it and falls to Podence, but Podence, man, he just fixed the ball beautifully over the on-rushing Leno, and or maybe it was Gabriel, but man, what a goal. What a goal.
Yeah, I mean, that takes some skill to chip it over like that, going sideways and still finish it. I mean, he made it look really easy, but that is not an easy thing to do, I promise you. So that was a great goal. Pedro Neto getting on the score sheet was huge for them as well. I mean, he's a young player still. I mean, it seems like he's been playing in and out for Wolves, but he's still really young. And so him getting that confidence is super important. Fabio Silva came on for Raul Jimenez. So him actually getting minutes doesn't hurt their team either. Kyle, it's disappointing to not, like, you know, Arsenal, they're a big six club, right? Or do we call it big five and leave them out? I'm not sure, but they're supposedly a big six club. And to almost expect them to lose to Wolves at home is quite shocking.
Yeah, it just tells you where they are and the trajectory that they've been on for, God, it must be, is 10 years harsh? I mean, because they were still winning in 10 years.
10 years might be harsh, maybe like 8, 6, 7, yeah.
Hasn't been going well in Wenger out, but yeah, it's pretty worrying, and they've been on a slide for a while now. It's kind of hard to know how much of this can you put on Arteta, and how much of this do you just put on the situation around Arsenal? It seems like there are a lot of players that are just passengers, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, like most situations, it's probably a combination of both. But, you know, while you probably can blame Arteta and his tactics, Aubameyang has been horrible, yeah. Kyle.
These players are way too good to be playing like this. I mean, there's talent on that team. This just makes no sense.
Yeah, I mean, look at Arsenal, right? They have 10 goals scored in 10 games. I don't care what team you are. Averaging one goal a game in the modern game is not good enough. It's not even close to good enough. And so you're paying Aubameyang big boy money now. And so he needs to step up and score some goals like he has his whole career. It's just not happening this year. And so you have to figure out a way to get supposedly your best player playing. And is it playing Lacazette with him, something he likes to do? Is it playing a different formation? I don't know. But clearly what you're doing is not working, especially when you have 5 losses in 10 games, Kyle.
Yeah, I think they need some creativity. They need an attacking center mid. Willian hasn't really pulled up any trees and isn't really adding much either, which surprises me. But here's a stat for you. Arsenal, this is Arsenal's worst start in Premier League history. Now, that only goes back to Premier League started in 1992, but that's pretty damning. That's pretty damning. So
yeah, I mean, it's not a good stat for them. That's for sure.
No.
I mean, just, I don't know. It's so disappointing. As we mentioned last week, Kane and Son have combined for almost double the goals that Arsenal have. And they just have to figure out to get that how to get that chemistry going. Because as a big six club, when Leeds United has a much better attack than you, something is wrong. And now there's something to be said about defense and defending into attacking and that whole thing. But I'm not sold. And
yeah,
even like a slight uptick in their play is not nearly good enough to get them into the top four.
Yeah, big game for them next weekend against Spurs. I mean, that could whoever loses that game, it looks really bad for either. I mean, if Arsenal somehow beats Spurs, you're thinking, what the hell, Mourinho? If Spurs beat Arsenal, I mean, where does that put them in the table?
Yikes. I mean, not higher than 14th. Yeah, that's for sure. Let's go on to the next game, Kyle. A game that probably should be blasted into outer space, but just due to the magnitude of the two teams we have to cover.
Boo.
Chelsea and Spurs, Kyle. 0-0 at Stamford Bridge. And likely a fair result, but for the neutral, a pretty boring game.
Oh, man. Yeah, I mean, I of course, am not a neutral in this point, but if I wasn't all in on Spurs or Chelsea, then this game would make me want to stab my eyes out. I mean, I think both teams probably had 2 chances, maybe 3 chances.
Well, I don't know if Spurs had 3 chances, but
okay, yeah, maybe. Chelsea 3, Spurs had like 1, maybe 2. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I mean, and then both teams defended really well, you got to say, but both gave up 1 glorious opportunity to the other. At the very end, with Lo Celso having a glorious opportunity, and then Giroud as well, both in extra time. But this is a game where you said is a fair result, and I'd have to agree with that. Both managers would probably be happy with the draw and a clean sheet.
Yeah, I mean, both managers just said after the game, Mourinho's like, the best part of this game is I go into the locker room and my players are dissatisfied with the result, which is a win for me. So basically saying, Spurs players expect to go in and beat Chelsea, which is a mentality shift, he says, from previous administrations in the Spurs managers. Whereas Chelsea, Frank Lampard said that the Chelsea midfield dominated Spurs and they expected more out of that game. And so, at the end of the day, it's probably likely equal. Mendy had to make 1 save in this game, and it was a good save. Lloris had to make a really good save off Mount, which he did.
That was a great stop by Mount.
Yeah, I mean, we give shit about Mount all the time, and he is a decent player. It's just not he's good enough player to probably play 50-odd games for Chelsea. Yeah. But, I mean, some takeaways from this game. I mean, they're both title-contending teams. I mean, there's not, a lot to say about the game because nothing happened. Yeah. But some takeaways for me, Kyle, at least, and I'll be interested to hear what you took away. But they're probably both, at least in this interim title race, as this goes for first place, they're probably both in it. I mean, quickly than I expected. I expect them to be a little more fiery, but more leaky in the back, and that's complete opposite right now. Especially ever since they brought Mendy over, and then. From the Tottenham side, I keep being impressed more and more on Ndombele, Kyle. He's a player. And I'm just enjoying. It's like, I don't know if it's the second year Sissoko syndrome or what he has, but it's a joy to watch, really. Like he's using his physicality, he has some like little slick turns he does. It's fun to watch. And then probably third, just from an American standpoint, Pulisic has some facial hair now, and he looks more mature. Maybe this will help him coat his injuries. So hopefully that new beard look will help him, and so he can play for the USMNT. But overall, I mean, I think that these are both good teams. What are your thoughts, Kyle?
Yeah, you know, there's been a lot of discussion over whether both teams are title contenders, probably more debate over if Spurs is. I think most people agree that Chelsea are. I had some doubts about Chelsea going into the season, about their defense and Lampard's ability to coach this defense to play well. But you got to say, I mean, it sacrificed some offensive production, but they've just shut up shop. I mean, I think they have the best defensive record in the league now, or maybe one of the best. But they're up there, and Spurs are probably up there too, but you expect that out of Mourinho. So, you know, I had doubts about Chelsea as title contenders at the beginning of the season, but I'm impressed. I think they're definitely title contenders. Spurs, you know, even with my Spurs hat on, I struggle to see a club like Spurs not Spurs it up. But the one thing that makes me feel differently about this team is Jose. As whether hate him or love him, you know, he really gives them an advantage over Chelsea. But I think Chelsea has more talent. Either way, I think both these teams are title contenders, but I'll probably wait about five more matches to see where Spurs are at, because they got a really tough run coming up. So they're both in it for me. Moment of the match, definitely that Lloris save on Mount. But I thought it was really interesting that both defenses didn't even give the opposing stars a sniff. I mean, Kane, Son, Werner, and Ziyech had nothing all game, nothing. And they left the chances to the other players, and none of them could take them. But, you know, the only thing that would have gotten a win for either of these teams was to be super clinical. So it was not for the neutral, but both would be happy.
Just to clarify your earlier point, Kyle, Tottenham has the best defensive record in the league. Chelsea is number two right now. And so clean sheet probably symbolized that better than most, but also Tottenham is third in offensive production and Chelsea is tied for first with Liverpool. And so you had defense win the day in that matchup.
You know, in such a weird league season where no one seems to be able to defend, these two teams' ability to shut up shop actually might work in their favor. It might actually.
Yeah, especially in these in this fixture congestion coming up. It's going to be brutal. We're going to have a lot of podcasts, Kyle, coming up. So listeners, you're lucky. But yeah, it's, you know, if you can defend, that travels anywhere, right? Whereas offense can go stagnant a lot of times. So anyways, let's move on to rapid fire. All right, first rapid fire game that we are going to cover, Crystal Palace 0, Newcastle United 2.
You sound thrilled.
Kyle, I have to eat my words a little bit. You probably won't find a larger Joelinton hater than me on this planet. He had a man of the match performance. He had a goal, he had an assist. We had people reaching out to us on Instagram, calling us out for our Joelinton hate. Good job, you know, you get a week. Congratulations. You know, but luckily the Premier League is a marathon and not a sprint. So I don't care if you win 1 mile in the 26, the other 25 miles, you're going to get smoked. And that's what happens when you have Joelinton. So congrats on your one good week, but not sustainable. Palace, Kyle, they actually had, I think, more possession than Newcastle United.
How often?
But clearly, they don't know what to do with it. And so when they're forced into games where they have to come back, it doesn't work. What are your thoughts?
I mean, all I have to say about Palace is no Zaha, no party, but I was shocked to see they actually dominated possession. I never thought we would ever, ever, ever see that. But Joelinton, man, what a player. What a
next
play.
Game we have to cover. Brighton 1, Liverpool 1. We had to pivot off that quickly, Kyle. Injury time penalty to Brighton to tie it up, Kyle, at the end. Our boy, Dortmund legend Jurgen Klopp, was not happy about this.
Do we want to go into VAR on this one? I mean, let's
not
try to
really. I'm more interested in Jurgen Klopp.
I mean, I don't know. It's debatable if it was a VAR call or not, but whether or not, we all know Klopp wasn't happy about it. He went into straight up rage mode on, I think it was BT Sport. There's been a lot of discussion about this. A lot of people saying Klopp lacked class. A lot of people taking Klopp's side. He basically made this point that they played in the Champions League in the midweek, but then had the, I think it was the very early
Saturday morning kickoff time. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I get what Klopp is saying. All these leagues around the world protect their best teams in European competition. I know they do it in Spain and
Germany too. Yeah.
Germany, Bayern, and PSG always seem to play on Friday or the early Saturday slot, but not in the Premier League. So I get where Klopp's coming from, but seeing him totally go at a broadcaster of all people, it didn't sit right with me.
You have to also realize the league that the Premier League is with its, you know, worldwide appeal. The German league doesn't necessarily have the same appeal, nor the Spanish league, even though they had Messi and a long time, Messi and Ronaldo. So that's the appeal. But the Premier League as a league itself has way more worldwide appeal. So they have more Asian friendly time slots, and then obviously more American friendly time slots, which are the later games that they have.
Yep.
German, I can tell you, they have two time slots unless there's a Friday night game. They play at like 6:30 a.m. Pacific or 9:30, and that's it. Like, those are their times. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the Premier League has to cater to all this and cater to TV markets around the world, which is a lot more complex. And Premier League teams vote on whether how many subs you can have on different time slots and et cetera for the benefit of all clubs financially, not just the, you know, the top six. And so yeah. I understand his frustration, but at the same time, you have to think of the other clubs and what they have to benefit from as well.
Yeah, right. But he did make the point that the small teams see five subs as an advantage for the big clubs. And I see the small club perspective of that. But, you know, when the crazy Christmas period rolls around, if the smaller clubs get any muscular injuries, I hear, I don't know, they better not complain about it, because I understand the idea that it's an advantage for the larger teams. But you know, those smaller clubs are going to need five subs also later. But my only last thought on this is I thought Liverpool were poor in this one. Brighton at least deserved a draw. Liverpool were not good from top to bottom. I don't know. What'd you think?
Same. Exact same, Kyle. Let's move on to Manchester City. They put a five piece on Burnley and absolutely smashed that shit team to smithereens. I mean, it was a total domination from XG, expected goals, to shots, to possession, whatever your stat. I mean, choose your stat, and City dominated. Mahrez, Kyle, had a nice little hat trick on the day.
He did, yeah. Of all the people to provide the goals for the City team, I didn't really expect Mahrez, because, you know, he's been pretty good for City, but I don't think he's been quite the same player as we saw at Leicester, where he was just amazing. But the guy is just a joy to watch. He also has a finish on him. There was one goal particularly where he sort of just danced around the entire defense and smacked it far post. Beautiful. But it's not saying much when you're playing Burnley, because they're really bad.
They're really bad.
They're terrible, dude. I mean, in past years, they've been really good defensively and offer barely anything going forward. That's their MO. But this season, they're poor defensively, too. I don't know. I was worried about them at the start of the season, and on this evidence, man, they're contenders to go down 100%.
Yeah, rightly so. I had a little more faith in them than you did preseason, but I mean, they're justifying your lack of faith. I mean, they're terrible. And Sean Dyche, you know,
you look frustrated.
I mean, rightly so. I mean, he had nothing to work with as far as budget in the summer to go and get new players.
Wasn't it Dale Stevens for $1 million from Brighton, and that's it?
God. And I wouldn't call that like Brighton's best player either, if you know what I mean.
Yeah,
brutal. Brutal for Burnley. Let's move on to Liverpool, England, where Everton actually plays. And they lost 1-0 to Leeds United, Kyle. My obviously probably one of the more entertaining 1-0 games that we'll see, as it seemed like it was, what's the word that the broadcasters use? A game of basketball, because the midfield was like non-existent. It would go from one 18 yard box to the other and back and forth. And it was just like, no interplay between the midfield. It was just back and forth. And another standout besides that was probably Rafinha. He looks saucy, Kyle. Even before the goal, I was thinking this, but
what a pickup. I mean, I had never heard of Rafinha. I admittedly had never watched Rennes and wondered how they qualified for the Champions League. But then you think they had Mendy, Rafinha, that guy Eduardo Camavinga that everyone seems to want. Yeah, Rafinha looks really saucy, man. I mean, not just the goal, which was excellent. You know, shot it from outside the box to his left, maybe 25 yards out, bottom corner. Beautiful shot, but he had some great touches. There's one sort of back heel or touch of the sole of his boot that comes to mind that led to a chance. His all-around game is really nice, and Leeds have some talent, man. I mean, Rodrigo's still coming back from his COVID diagnosis and hasn't even started in 2 games, but Leeds deserved this one. They really did, and it's interesting you picked up on the lack of midfield in this game, the sort of back-and-forth nature, which is Leeds' game, and that's totally what Leeds would have wanted. So they had Everton on their toes.
Before I move on, one moment on Rodrigo. He needs to start, Kyle. He's one of their best 11 players, and I know Patrick Bamford has had a hot start, but this team needs some quality sometimes on the finishes of goals because they create a lot of chances, but they need that poacher that scored maybe, I don't know, 30 goals last season. And Rodrigo might be a really good answer. And I vent Rodrigo to play more.
Well, here's an interesting idea. I mean, Bamford is playing well. He might not have the best shot conversion rate on earth, but Rodrigo is not just a straight center forward. He can play too. So why not have, I mean, think of this front three, Bamford, Rodrigo, Rafinha. It's pretty nice.
Not terrible, and you have some good options off the bench with Helder Costa and Jack Harrison that could play too, so not terrible, really not. Let's move on to West Brom 1, Sheffield United 0. God, what a snooze fest. I mean, there are a lot of shots in this game, but man, these teams are bad.
Yeah,
teams are really bad.
They're both bad, man. I mean, we've said a lot of bad things about West Brom and Fulham, but man, Sheffield, they deserve only having 1 point so far this season. They've without doubt been the worst team so far. It's really kind of shocking considering how good they were last season and the season when they got promoted. I don't know how this game had 22 shots for Sheffield to West Brom 17. Man, these teams both look like they're kind of going nowhere. But real quick on West Brom, Conor Gallagher, who scored the goal for West Brom, yet another member of the Chelsea loan army. I don't know where they keep finding these guys from.
Yeah. I mean, we realized how big their loan army was last season when they couldn't buy any players and they brought everyone back home. Come on home, kids. And it was quite jarring to see how many players they actually have and some that they just didn't even want back.
How many good players too? I mean, seriously, he's a guy that, you know, could probably be a successful Premier League player. He's young.
Sheffield United, Kyle, actually had double the expected goals that West Brom had, but they still can't score goals. And I believe they're sitting at, I believe I'm checking right now, I think it's four goals on the season in 10 games. And we were making fun of Arsenal for scoring 10, but four? Good four God, goals. That's awful.
And 1 point after 10 games, I heard somewhere, and I'm pretty sure the stats back this up. 1 point after 10 games is the worst start to a Premier League season ever. And I remember how bad Derby County was in like 2008. I mean, I think they finished like 10-11 points, so not looking good for
Crystal. I mean, the best, probably most of our audience is younger, but according to our Spotify metrics, who say our audience loves Drake and Kendrick Lamar and those artists, but our audience probably remembers Huddersfield Town as being the most recent very terrible team, the one that went down, not the one that miraculously stayed up. They had 12, 14 points or so. I mean, Sheffield United, if they keep this pace, is on pace for four. So that tells you how good they've been playing.
I don't think they're that bad, but yeah, they're going to give them a run for their money.
Oof. Moving on to our second to last game here, we had Leicester 1, Fulham 2. I really don't want to talk about this game. Kyle, do you have any thoughts?
Wonk, wonk. Oh, man. What happened? I didn't watch this game live, but I know I started texting you at some point like, dude, what the hell is happening? 2-0 down to Fulham at halftime? Come on, Brendan Rodgers. What's going on? And, you know, I watched I went back and watched this game, and honestly, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I thought Fulham weren't bad. I mean, I know Leicester dominated possession. Fulham kind of counter, but they had a lot of chances and was probably a fair result.
Yeah, Kyle, you're not wrong, honestly. As somebody who's an adopted Leicester fan over the past couple of seasons, it's brutal. I mean, Leicester had more shots than Fulham did, but that they had the same amount of shots on target. Fulham had a higher expected goals count, but one of them was a penalty, right? So you have to factor all that in. But yeah, I mean, they actually looked semi-dangerous, Fulham did. And so that's probably shocked Leicester that this team could actually play on the same pitch with them. So that's like, you know, took them aback quite a bit. But after they were taken aback, Leicester weren't super clinical with their chances. They created a lot. They had a lot in the box, but they didn't ask Areola to do too much in goal, or as much as 18 shots should have a goalie do.
Nice and goal, so, Harvey Barnes.
Yeah, from Harvey Barnes. But they just need to be a little more clinical in the box, I think. Defensively, not the best performance either, as you were mentioning to me pre-show. So some things to tighten up. I think if Leicester lose this upcoming week, I think they're at Sheffield. If they lose then it's all hands on deck. Sound the alarm, submarine sinking, like that level of panic. But
this table is so condensed. I think they'll still be fine.
They lose to Sheffield United, Kyle. That is like a League One side.
Yeah. No, I hear you. But so, what do you think? Is Leicester just generally going off the pace, or is this just a blip? I think it's just a blip. I don't see this actually being.
I think they're not in form right now, but I don't think it's like they're. I don't think they're going to continue this for long, if I have to say. But they're definitely not in form. Last game, Kyle, West Ham 2, Aston Villa 1. Villa might have arguably been the better side in this game, Kyle. And Ollie Watkins, if not for a long arm, might have been onside.
Yeah, we didn't want to talk about VAR earlier, but if you were ever going to talk about any VAR call, this was the one. I mean, Ollie Watkins, he scores in extra time after missing a penalty earlier in the game. But man, yeah, you're right. His elbow was what was offsides. But if you look at where the center of his gravity is compared to where the center of the defender's gravity is, he's in line. This should never be an offsides call for me. I don't know how they use the arm to identify where his line is when you can't score with your arm. So
it's ridiculous, and we don't have the technology to know exactly when it left the assister's foot either.
Yeah,
and so it's ridiculous. I mean, honestly, when it's that small of margins, it's not. This doesn't make the game better, Kyle. It really doesn't.
Yeah, it's a disgrace. I mean, Villa is so unlucky on this, and I feel bad for Watkins. It's just a total misuse of the handball rule. It makes me kind of mad, which is a shame because, you know, this game actually was pretty entertaining and all people are going to talk about is VAR. It's a shame.
Right. Credit to West Ham, Kyle. They did. I mean, even though it was controversial, they did get the win. They did score 2 goals, even though expected goals and all the stats were against them. 34% possession. Wow. That's a little jarring. In this game, 6 shots, but 2 of them went in, and West Ham up to what, 5th in the table, Kyle?
5th place. Wow. Hey, we gave David Moyes some shit earlier on the season. I got to give him praise though. I mean, David Moyes is just, this finally looks like a Moyes team. I mean, they're defending well. Sorry, that was my dog. They're defending well. They look solid. They hit teams on the counter and they're playing Moyes ball. So I actually kind of have to give him credit for that.
They're playing a similar lineup every week now. I mean, they have Mikel Antonio back. Sebastian Haller did a job for them while Mikhail Antonio was away. But yeah, these Jared Bowen types, the Thomas Suchek, Declan Rice doing a really good job. They're integrating Saeed Benrahma into the team now. So they're getting the Moya-style players and integrating them week in and week out. And Lucas Fabianski, former Swansea legend, I mean, keeps doing a job for them as well. So solid players all around.
Absolutely. One more thing. Jack Grealish, kind of like what you're saying about Ndombele, you don't see this in stats, but Jack Grealish had some nice touches. The guy's a baller. He had some saucy moments where, you know, we'll have to try to find some clips of his touches and dribbles to share on social media or something, because he was looking nice.
So that's it for Rapid Fire. We're going to transition now into the Champions League. So we've been doing this running total for the previous 4 weeks of Champions League. 11-9 is the current score that I'm winning by, Kyle. We made our predictions before the episode. I know we're recording this a day later than usual. So two games have already been played. And so the games that have been played, Porto took on Manchester City. I predicted that City would win 2-1. Kyle predicted that City would win 2-0. It was actually 0-0, so neither of us got a point for that game. But in Liverpool-Ajax, what happened, Kyle?
I predicted a 1-0 win for Liverpool. You actually went for Ajax to win this one 2-1, which, you know, I toyed with that idea as well in my head. But Liverpool did actually keep a clean sheet, and they won 1-0. So so that actually leaves us at, like you said, at we were at 11-9 before. So me actually getting the score right on Ajax Liverpool actually brings us, guess what, equal again, 11-11. So we'll see where the next matches leave us. We also on this match week have Manchester United at home to PSG and Sevilla at home against Chelsea. Who you got in the United PSG game?
It's a tough one. I mean, PSG have not been good this season. And I know they're leading the Farmers League down there in France, but they are not playing well.
Are they really in the lead?
Because they are in the lead. That's how bad that league is, yeah. I mean, they just lost to Monaco. Cesc Fabregas leading the charge there. Remember that name. Manchester United is so inconsistent as well. So I think the safe thing here is just to predict a 1-1 draw. You know, just kind of a shit fest all around is what we're going for. What do you got, Kyle?
No, I mean, it's tempting. And you're right. This is probably the most difficult game to call because you're right. PSG have not been good. Mbappe isn't scoring in the Champions League, which is kind of baffling. Don't know what's going on there. And Manchester United are the definition of a Jekyll and Hyde team. But considering there seems to be a little bit of a feel-good factor following Cavani's double at the weekend, I'm going to go with the 2-1 United win, actually. I don't see PSG really turning it around. Thomas Tuchel's really under some pressure there.
As for Sevilla at home to Chelsea, you and I were talking off-air, and you told me these two teams would tie 1-1, and I'd have to agree with that.
It's clear that both of these teams are going to be the ones to progress. I think Ren and Krasnodar both have just...
Yeah, they're already out.
Yeah. I mean, they're not even close. So these two are definitely going through easily. It's a pretty even game, and I think really highly of Chelsea, but I also think highly of Lopetegui and what he's doing to get his career back on track, because I thought it was harsh when
he
got fired from Spain and then went to Madrid. Got fired from Spain right before the World Cup. Went to Madrid, and things didn't go well. You know, on this one... Yeah, I think with Chelsea just playing Spurs, I could see Chelsea not putting out their absolute best team, and Sevilla are a hell of a team. So I'm going to go 1-1 also. It's hard to argue against that.
Yeah. I think some closing thoughts, Kyle. We're going to start to get some fans in some Premier League stadiums around England. So I think the London area teams, if I'm right, can see some fans. And then as well, what was the other area? I know it's London. Liverpool. It's not Liverpool. It's Liverpool. Yeah. It's not Manchester. I know that.
Right. It's just London and Liverpool, I believe. So Spurs, Chelsea, Palace, Fulham, Liverpool, Everton will all be able to see. I think it's just 2,000 fans. Is that right?
You somehow left out Arsenal on that list. But yeah.
Here I am trying to like be unbiased.
Just
a subconscious thing.
Sure.
Ditto. But North London Derby, man. North London Derby. That's a huge game for both these clubs for different reasons.
Yeah, you have the narratives. If you have Spurs, like, you know, you yourself, I think, are a Spurs fan. So if you lose to Arsenal, it's like, what the hell is wrong with Spurs? You lose to a shit club like Arsenal. On the flip side, if you're Arsenal and Arteta, you're kind of under fire already, and you lose another game, it's whew, 6 losses in 11. That's not good. So it's a fascinating matchup.
It is, and of all games to have the first set of fans back into the stadium by, apparently they'll be all in that new Tottenham South Stand, that giant singular stand, which apparently gets pretty loud. So it's like I don't even know. But I think a lot of Spurs fans will be really confident about this one. But, dude, I got to be honest with you. I dread these matches, man. I know Arsenal's going to show up and finally play well. They always do. But I'm confident about Spurs, and mainly confident about Mourinho knowing how to pick apart that terrible defense.
Yeah, I think it'll be a good game, honestly.
Me too.
What we're going to close on is local team here in the Pacific Northwest where Kyle and I live. The Sounders are in the Major League Soccer playoffs. Yeah, playoffs. Ooh. Over here in America. America, baby. We can't just end the season like the rest of the world. We need to play a long season and then decide on one game playoffs who the better team is. And so Sounders play FC Dallas tonight. And if you follow MLS, this should be a win for the Sounders, but again, one game playoffs, anything can happen.
Sounders got to win, man. They have to. They've just got so much more talent than FC Dallas. They seem to continue to play great football, and unlike these other MLS teams who just get retirees when they're 35, the Sounders actually recruit players in Latin America in their prime. So, yeah, I don't know. I would say if I was going to recommend anyone to watch an MLS team to someone who's never watched MLS before, I'd probably recommend the Sounders.
The Sounders, LAFC are probably like the two most exciting teams when healthy to watch currently. That's all we have, Kyle. Great week coming up, as you mentioned. We got the North London Derby, Spurs in the FA Cup, drew Marine FC, 8th-tier side. So exciting news there. Man, if Marine FC somehow wins... Oh man, we might have to boot you off the podcast and find a new co-host. But man, I would love to see that.
I think that's the biggest gap in league positions ever in any English competitive match, which is, hey, good for Marine FC in these crazy times where, you know, small clubs are struggling. But they should spank them. I mean, they're probably on equal footing as our amateur league team here in Seattle. Mm-hmm.
Honestly, it's probably not that much better. But for Kyle, I am Justin. Make sure you stay safe out there. And we will see you next week covering the North London Derby and all of the biggest matches. See ya.
Stay safe, everyone.